Hello, my name is Brian Novoselsky, and I am an associate editor with Drug Topics.
Today, I am joined by Farhan Dozer, a sergeant first class in the 7th enlisted rank of the U.S. Army, to discuss PTSD among U.S. veterans. Welcome, and thank you so much for joining me today.
How you doing, sir?
So before getting into our discussion, would you just want to give our audience a little background on yourself, kind of what you've been up to, what you've done in the past, stuff like that?
Well, today, I'm a sickle cell trait advocate. I actually have the sickle cell trait myself. Part of my experience of what I went through the military, it ended my career. And outside of that, discovering that my life wasn't over and that I was connected to a whole nother community that I could support and use my voice in, I became an advocate for sickle cell trait.
Awesome. So now let's get into our discussion around PTSD and U.S. veterans. Basically, what has your experience with PTSD been like?
Yeah, initially, you know, I played basketball, so I've always felt I had a level of mental toughness. However, in my transition out of the military, through my physical pain and then the emotional pain, it was definitely something I had never experienced before. And, you know, going to the hospital, to the doctors, the mental health providers, trying to figure out, you know, what's going on with myself. Took a long time. I've been in this process about 14 years, and then I've been retired probably about, it'll be 12 years this year. So I've just started to get a better understanding of myself, of the stories and the things that happened to me that I made up. A lot of the stuff that was, you know, caused for myself, I could say. I could honestly tell you that. But yeah, the anxiety, the severe depression and anxiety, stress, worrying, it's just been something I've been recently able to start to manage.
Could you just give a little bit more background kind of on your history in the Army and kind of where you were stationed and what your experience was like there?
Yeah, so I joined at 19, influenced by my uncle who was in the Air Force Reserve. He told me to join the reserves first, because if you don't like it, if you do full time, you're going to be stuck in that contract. So I did the National Guard first for about almost 5 years. And then I became actually AGR, which is an active guard full-time for the National Guard. So I did that for 20 years. From there, I was stationed all over, been in Norway, Germany, Michigan. I was stationed there, Fort Irwin. I was out at Fort Irwin. Went to basic at Fort Jackson. Fort Sam Houston for a little bit. I was supposed to become a medic, but I got injured during that training. And so I was recycled and then sent to Fort Lee to do the supply and the track vehicle repair.
Going back to PTSD and kind of your experiences, have you talked to other U.S. vets about PTSD, and were their experiences similar to yours, or have you seen differences?
You know, ultimately, it's they're all very, very similar. I'm not a combat vet, so that level of PTSD is totally different. What people don't understand is that we do train for combat, so there is a part of that our brains are already hardwired for that preparation. But for those of my brothers and sisters who actually experienced that, yeah, I can't speak to that. But a lot of it, when you really talk to veterans about the PTSD and the sense of belonging, is something I've discovered. Like, we miss that camaraderie. We miss that, our identity being inside of that uniform and inside of that brotherhood and sisterhood. So a lot of it, from what I hear, is connected to that sense of belonging, most ultimately.
Do you think there are common misconceptions about people who have it, or kind of just in the media and people that don't really understand it?
Oh, yeah, it's destroying. It's destroying us as a society. It's destroying us as the label of us as veterans, because, again, people forget that we're people first, right? And the 2% of us, or the 1% of us that chose to serve this country, we're no different, except that, you know, again, our mindset shifts. You know, another thing I've learned is, you know, I was trained to objectify another human being as a terrorist and then trained to kill that terrorist. But one day my brain's going to remember that that's a person, right? But that's not a veteran issue. That's a human being flaw, right? So we as people deal with this type of conversation But the labeling of it, I think, hurts us the most because we get labeled with that PTSD and then all the things that come with that training and all the things that come with that history or that person's experience. It gets labeled. And I believe that the mental health PTSD label is so many layers to that. So you can't just label it that unless you actually talk to that person to find out exactly what they are dealing with, and even if they can articulate it. Like I said, I've only been able to do this because of the work that I've put in to stay alive and to become an advocate for this other gene. So I've dedicated my life to something else. But after 24 years, it was all, I was half my life in the military. So yeah, for sure, the labeling of PTSD, it's a human being flaw. However, it's how we objectify one another, and that's something that I'm learning that really hurts us as a society, period.
Great. So it definitely seems like obviously you're experiencing after your service, after being, kind of really thrust into all of that world. And it seems like kind of finding your thing and something that you care about and you're passionate about afterwards is really important.
Yeah, for sure.
Whether it's in the doctor's office from clinicians and physicians or kind of just real world things that you or other people in your experience have, what do you think are the best ways of treating PTSD?
I tell my veteran community, first you got to be willing. You got to be willing to look at it first, right? I was in denial for a long time. My friends saw it, but I didn't see it. And so it's that ability to tell the truth to yourself. And like, to me, that's the first step. If you can do that and be honest with yourself and admit to yourself that I'm not well and I'm dealing with something, then you're able to find that support, to find that help. It took me a long time for me to get to that point. But like I said, once I found another piece of existence, it really helps. So we do talk about that, especially going to the VA. I don't know if you want to get that far into it, but there's already an inherited conversation of how we get treated at the VA, right? So a lot of us, especially the younger generation, we don't even want to be involved in that because there's so many different negative contexts of stories. There's so many different, they're not going to take care of you. All these different things that come with just saying the VA, right? And the emotional charges that come with that. So how can you be open to go to a place where you're already afraid of that you may not even be taken care of or even taken serious? Because a lot of it is invisible. Like people look at me like, oh, you're fine, but my mind is 5 years in the future worrying about, tomorrow. And it's like, if you don't understand that, and so in sharing my story and sharing information like that, I kind of speak to that. So people can kind of look in their own life and kind of see, what is that for? But also, you can't deny that some of the mental health aspects of it are chemically imbalanced. So some people do need drugs and medication to help sustain and maintain that. But for people like myself, like I said, I had a level of mental toughness, and I just knew that my mind was stronger than that. And it was just something that I had never experienced, and it kind of set me on the edge.
Great. So you mentioned the VA. Are there misconceptions about how kind of the VA can step in and help veterans after they've served?
Yeah, for sure. It wasn't until a couple of years back now that I gave in and I went to do the cognitive behavior mental health course, and truly, truly was a blessing because it helped me understand how my thoughts were and how exaggerated my thoughts were and how some of those conversations in my mind were so continuous. So yeah, going to the VA for sure is I totally recommend it, after my own personal experience. But like I said, for the first probably 10 years or so, I wouldn't even step foot in there because I didn't, and not being a combat veteran. So now you're looking at that, it's like, where am I gonna fit in? If I'm a circle, am I gonna fit into one of their programs that's a square, right? But then you also, for myself, I dealt with survival guilt because I wanted to go over there, and then I lost friends over there, and then I had friends who committed suicide after serving. So it's like then you live with that because you didn't get a chance to go there when you train for your whole life for that. So the mental health aspect of it is so many layers. It's not always just a combat type of PTSD.
Are there certain trends that you've noticed when it comes to clinicians dealing with PTSD? So like if you've like have you seen doctors to kind of get this treated and get this figured out? Or do you think that there's kind of like a disconnect between physicians or people who don't really have experience as veterans, but they're still being asked to treat veterans? Do you think there's like a disconnect? Do you think it's kind of tough for that to kind of be executed?
Well, I'm going to tell you why it's tough off the top, because as veterans, for me, I remember being taught that civilians are not going to understand you, right? So now you get taught that from 19 years old until you're 50 something, 40. Well, I was 43 when I retired, but you live with that in the background of your life. So when you come to a person who is supposed to help you at the VA and they're not a veteran, you already have that stuff in the background of the disconnect. So you're not even gonna, you don't even know. Like, you don't even know what I've been through. And so for me, I had to start setting that aside when I decided to go for the CBT, was to allow that person to hear me, right? But even before then, when I was still serving, I was dealing with my mental health. And the guy at the Air Force Base, I don't know, it's like we just couldn't connect. Like, I heard him, but we just couldn't connect. And for whatever that was at the time, I don't know. I can't put my finger on it, but I can tell you that I saw this guy almost once a week, and we just, like, I heard him, but there was just something in that space. And he was an officer, Air Force officer. So I don't think it's just whether you're a civilian doctor or a military doctor. I think it's in the listening of one another. And there's definitely a disconnection for sure.
Definitely seems like it's important to kind of understand that everyone's going through something different and getting over that mountain.
And I won't say either, as a black male, there's this conversation in the world now that I need to have a physician that looks like me and all that. I don't agree with that per se, because again, it's the connection from person to person. I don't once you get a level of healing, it doesn't matter what the skin color is. That's another human being. And so, but there is a tough conversation in the world about having people that look like me to take care of me. And I think that's just another objectification way that keeps our society separate. So whether it's a male, female, white, black, like, I've had help in different areas from different cultures as well.
What advice would you give to current US veterans experiencing PTSD?
My current advice would be, again, tell the truth to yourself. Right? Even in the military, we get a lot of training around mental health, but we have to also pass that to our family, right? Because the family needs to be able to pay attention to the stress signs and the symptoms as well. So I would encourage my veteran community, my brothers and sisters, to tell the truth to yourself and then share that information with your family so that they can be taken care of. And again, it takes the same courage that we chose to serve this country with and the confidence to then take care of ourselves. And that's one of the biggest things that I found for myself, was to restore that confidence in that area that I didn't have it, back into the government system, the VA system, to take care of me. And what I will tell them as well, they have a lot of patients. I had to give my doctor compassion because he has 1,500 patients he sees. And to understand that I can't get in there to see him when I want to, was what I noticed was my fear of dying at home, right? So I advocate with a community that has sickle cell, and they go to a hospital for their disease, and they don't want to die in the emergency room. Well, I don't want to die at home, because if I'm not feeling well, I'm not in a good space, and I can't get to the VA, then what do I do, right? And so then you have that to deal with. So I tell that to my brothers and sisters, there's a level of patience we have to have, but also that confidence to not give up, to seek that help. And if you can't get it from there, please go to your family, because your family loves you. And they may not understand, but I tell people, I don't want you to understand me. I don't understand me. But if you can relate to me, then that furthers our conversation, right? The relatedness. And so I preach that, I teach that, to have that relatedness for one another as well. So.
So kind of flipping the head over here, what is one thing about PTSD that you would like people that haven't experienced it to know?
What I want people to know that may not experience PTSD already,
Yes.
start to heal, right? There are things in our life, again, this is not just a veteran conversation, this is a human being flaw, right? So there's a lot of things that we grow up And one of the biggest things, I'm going to say this, is to restore that relationship with your parents. Like, our parents are our two most important people in our life. And a lot of times that disconnection happens with our loved ones, our mom and dad. And sometimes as children, we don't really understand what it is to be an adult. And so we carry that through our life as adults. And then you join the service for whatever reason, but you still have some of these things that you're dealing with that you've never settled. And so if you haven't had PTSD, but you've dealt with some kind of stress or anxiety or something like that, I would recommend that you start to look in your life and see where are those feelings coming from. And a lot of times you can look back at your parents and we think that my dad didn't love me or my mom abandoned me. There's a lot of things that we carry that doesn't get expressed, out right away in our adult life. So that is something that I've had to heal and reconcile with my parents along my healing journey to stay alive, because I did have some things about my mom and dad that I made up that wasn't the truth. And if you look in society, a lot of the stuff that people are dealing with in relationships, a lot of it stems back to our parents and our environment that we grew up in. So our homes are so important. The stigmas of, they say, the blacks and Hispanics and the white, we have different, stigmas that we deal with about going to mental health appointment because I'm not crazy. Like, no, you're not crazy. But again, sometimes it's chemically imbalanced that we need help with, or sometimes it's just life that you're dealing with. And that's why I love Comigo, because that device helped me start to relax. Like, the stress in my body is different. You have the mental stress, you have that fractured integrity of your soul, but it gets expressed through your body. And sometimes they say that the body keeps the score. So sometimes I have a body reaction first before the thought. So then now I have to understand this process, and that device and working with Comigo has truly helped me, because I didn't want to take medication. Like, I took Prozac before and I didn't like the feeling. I didn't like the zombie feeling. So everybody doesn't want to have medication, but some people may need it. God created all of it for good. So sometimes we do need those pills to help us maintain until we can figure out what's going on in our life. So it's just so important, because I've had friends take their life. I've had veterans friends take their, I have my friend's son take his life. So now you're talking about the mental health, the PTSD, the distress, the despair. I had to look and see where that was coming from, the disappointment in myself, the diminished experience, and then what that feels like. And you get to hopelessness and despair. It's like, why bother? And if you get to that state, it's too late for some. So yeah, this is something that is truly important to me. Because I've been able to maintain myself and help other people around me, just kind of show them, because you can't tell people. The value is when you can discover where it's coming from. So if we can help people look and see in their life where it's coming from, and I think that's what mental health doctors is different, because sometimes in those meetings, they bring up all that stuff, right? All those feelings and emotions come up, and then I'll see you next week. And it's like, hey, wait a minute. I don't feel well now even more, but now I can't see you for another week or two. So what do you do with that? And some people walk away, and at the end of the day, they say 22 or more veterans take their life, one every 65 minutes. So now you're looking at my brothers and sisters in that conversation, and like, okay, so how do we help that?
I really appreciate that. That's all I have for you today. I know this is a very personal subject, but I appreciate you kind of digging deep and giving me some really amazing answers. Thank you so much for joining me today, and I hope you have a great day.
I appreciate you. Thank you for what you do too.
Thank you.